Show.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of The Brand New Show. I'm Neil Humphrey, Brand Gladiator, your host. And as usual, I have a fantastic super guest with me. And actually, this is a real honour because I'm actually in front of the legendary Mark Creaser. Mark is a copywriter by trade, would you say? Or are you a marketing director?
I am a copywriting specialist. Mm-hmm. I think I'd put it that way.
That's cool.
But more on the marketing side, really, yeah, these days. My formal title is Chief Marketing Officer, which is darned impressive.
I am impressed.
Well, I can see that on your face.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
It's like wow.
I thought you might have a title like God of Words That Make People Love Me.
No. The printers refused to print that on the card, which was unbelievable.
You had to have a really long card.
Really long card.
Fold it out.
Yep. Again and again and again. No, just keep it simple, really.
So you work with Nigel Bottrell,
yes,
at the Entrepreneur Circle.
Yes, I do.
Have you always done that? Have you always been the Chief of Marketing Officer?
No, I am coming up for 9 years, I think, with Nigel.
And you're still there?
And I'm still here, very much so. This is my second ever job. Before this, I worked at Busy Bees, the childcare company. Not in a nursery, though, which would be an odd sight. A head office on the commercial team. And then left there and got a job with Nigel on his sales team for My Mag and The Best Of as it was. And then over the last 8 or 9 years, we've launched a whole load of different things. I've been involved in pretty much everything. I have worked in every part of the business, in every business, written a whole load of stuff, read a whole load of stuff, launched a whole load of products, and generally done everything there is to do.
Because I wanted to kind of have a chat with you because you are the unconventionally handsome mind behind the brand. Would that be fair to say, or just is it a contributory element?
Well, I'm a good team player.
You do what you're told.
No. Quite the opposite, in fact. But Nigel and I have got a very strong partnership where creativeness is required. Both of us are, on our own, quite good at coming up with ideas, coming up with different angles on things, or just thinking things through. But combined, preferably in the same room, we find that we're able to tap into each other's ideas and build on them to a much greater degree than we would be on our own, mm-hmm, or indeed with anybody else. That works in a room. It also works when we're working on copy together at arm's length. If I write a sales letter, it'll go to Nigel, and then it'll come back to me, and then I'll go back to Nigel, and we'll just hit it back and forth like Andy Murray, mm-hmm, and another well-known tennis player.
Or a wall, perhaps.
Yeah, or a wall. And it just works.
Yeah.
And it's worked. We both enjoy it, the creative process, and it's much easier when you've got somebody else that's kind of on the same wavelength that has the depth of knowledge that you've got. Because there are lots of very, very creative people, mm-hmm, but Nigel and I have shared a lot of experiences in the last 9 years. We've learned a lot of the same lessons at the same time. And when you're sitting down, it's kind of the unspoken stuff. It's like, it's the context that we're working with. Mm. We both made the same mistake 5 years ago, and now we don't need to make that mistake again, nor communicate what that mistake was, and like remind each other what it was. It's just there. It's just unspoken, and that makes working together very, very easy, and very, very enjoyable.
Because you said that, because you didn't always work as a copywriter, you were brought in a sales function. When did you kind of figure out that actually, you know, I'm pretty good at doing this stuff?
That's a good question. I remember the first time I ever gave a piece of copy to Nigel that he read and gave it straight back to me and said that's the first time ever that I've ever read anything that anybody else has ever written and not wanted to make a single change. And that was quite early on, and quite instructive for me, really. I stole his style a little bit. I'm quite a keen student of marketing. I'm quite a keen student of everything. I love learning stuff. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of sales letters, study sales material, and I write a lot as well, and writing a lot really helps. But I've never really set out to be a copywriter. It just happened that I was better than most other people when it came to writing copy. So it's like if you're good at making tea,
yeah.
See, I guess people ask you to make them a cup of tea a lot. If you're good at writing copy, everyone in the business comes to you. Oh, you couldn't just write this for me. You couldn't just read this and rewrite it. You haven't got a headline for me, have you? You couldn't just give me a subject line for this, could you? And you end up like a magician just producing subject lines out of hats. It's the world's most rubbish trick. But people seem to be impressed with it. So I just do it more and more. And then, of course, the more you do it, the better you get at it. So then the greater the divide between you and the rest of the team. And then suddenly you find yourself being referred to as a copywriter.
Mm-hmm.
Happened to me, accidentally.
Well, that's great, because I think when you hear Nigel speaking, one of the messages that comes across loud and clear is that if he lost all his abilities, the one thing that he would really be upset about, but the one skill that he acknowledges much of the success of the work that you've done is down to being able to write copy. But you're not kind of classical trained writers or journalist trained writers, are you? It's understanding the medium.
Yeah, I mean, if it came to it, and you can only pull one thing away from the business, if it all fell down, that one thing would be the database.
Mm-hmm.
Because having a relationship with the person that's reading your copy is much more important than the copy that you send to them. So it is flattering when you get a good result from any piece of copy, any sales material that you craft, that you write, that you take time to produce. But the truth of it is that the huge majority of the response will be down to the choice of list that you send that copy to and not to the copy itself. You could say, the classic is the perfectly written letter selling lawnmowers mailed to the owners of high-rise apartments. It doesn't matter how good the headline is. It doesn't matter how eye-catching the copy, how good the image is, or how strong the offer. They haven't got a lawn. They're not buying many lawnmowers. It all comes down to list. And part of the skill as a copywriter is understanding the people in the list and writing in a way that you feel they're going to relate to, understanding their desires, their needs, their wants, their fears, and addressing them in the piece of copy.
So I might have, for you listening, eagle-eared listeners would have noticed that I mentioned the word media, and I was talking about the medium of writing as opposed to the media that you write in. And of course, what you very cleverly, I should say, brought into the conversation was talking about the market being the most important thing. And actually, would it be fair to say that the Entrepreneur's Circle as a brand has been built on direct marketing copy?
Yeah, everything that we do is built on direct response marketing. So there is no brand building budget. There's no, let's do this, it would be a really good thing to get our name out there. That doesn't ever cross our thinking. Everything that we do is direct response, and by direct response, I mean that we will only spend money, we will only touch people if there is a reason for them to come back to us and usually buy something. Occasionally that response might not be to buy something, it might be to request a phone call, it might be to come to an event, it might be to have a meeting, it might be to request more information. But we don't do any of those super sexy adverts that you'll see, like BMW, for example, produce, where they look all shiny and super cool and there's just the logo in the corner and that's all there is to it, really. We don't really care about getting our brand out there. What we care about doing is building the list of people that are interested in what we've got and what we do and how we can help them.
Because it's an entirely legitimate way of approaching it. I think that most people who might be kind of students of the traditional kind of brand marketing school of thought would say, make the logo bigger, do flashy ads. It's all about the feeling, and it's about creating an emotional bond with your customers. And brand awareness is just about sticking your logo on everything. But having read recently Dan Kennedy's No BS Guide to Brand Building Through Direct Response, which is of course about building a brand through direct response, that kind of turns it on its head, because actually the main kind of message from that book, isn't it, is about they consume your marketing first, and as a result of that relationship that you build with them, i.e. your audience, that then the brand grows and develops around that. Is that...
The big example that Dan pulls into that book is the Iron Tribe. Mm-hmm. And the Iron Tribe was built on direct response. The Iron Tribe was built on, we're looking for these people, here's what's on offer, do you want to be one of them? And the advantage... the advantage they created for themselves was the limited number of slots in each town as they rolled across the states. But what they did very, very well was understand the wants and needs of their target market. They understood who their target market was. And if you can do that, then nothing else really matters. Mm. It's very important to touch your prospects emotionally. And you can't do that with a quick glance at who you think they are and what they might want. And by the same token, you can't make the same bit of copy sing to very different people. You need to understand where they've come from, what their experiences are, why they would do this, why they wouldn't do this, what their questions are going to be, and you need to cover them all off individually. A very, very powerful way of doing that is through a story, mm-hmm. Which you can tell a story and fit all of your benefits, all of your features, all of everything into the right story, and people read it. People read it because they're trained to read stories. They're trained to engage in stories in a way they're not trained, unfortunately, to read sales copy. And the beauty of the story is that you can make clear who the hero in the story is. And if the hero in the story is extremely similar to your prospect, then it will call out to them very, very strongly indeed.
I think that people kind of misinterpret branding as a discipline or as a mindset, if you like, to be very much about kind of like slap a logo on it. And for me, as a brander, call it what you will, there's that kind of need to educate people. But this thing about saying that underneath the visuals, it's a compelling story at the end of the day, that is what connects you with your audience. Yeah. And then if they, as you said, if they can relate to the protagonist of the story, or even if it's just resolving a need that they might have that they not even appreciate that you could do in the first instance, that you might not realise that you could solve that problem, but actually now they do. It's like, oh, right, these are the people I need to speak to. Do you think that the media that you use is going to continue to evolve? Because we talk about kind of like the written letter, the written word, but we live in a very visual society. It's all about, we're constantly bombarded with visual messages. Do you think that there's going to be a shift in the way in which you get that message across, deliver the copy, or will then always be a place for the written word?
Well, I'm no predictor of the future.
Come on, stick your neck out.
So my belief is that there will always be a place for well-written copy. What I've found in recent years is that more and more of my copy isn't going to be sent out as a direct mail, but is designed to be read and delivered as a video sales letter. And we have sold a huge number of products successfully through video sales letters. So the copy that I write isn't really any different in structure, isn't really very different in language than it would be if I was doing it as a traditional sales letter. It's just that Nigel stands in front of the camera, or someone stands in front of the camera and reads it from the auto cue and creates a video sales letter. So in that respect, that media has already shifted to some degree. The video sales letter works very, very well. Now, where it's going to go next, I don't know. Have you got Yo?
Yo? No.
No Yo?
No Yo.
Do you know what Yo is?
No.
Yo is brilliant. Yo is an app that started off as a joke. I'm going to show it to you for the benefit of...
For the
benefit of people that are listening to this in black and white. So, Yo, see this app here?
Yeah.
Right, I can open up Yo, yeah. And now I can send a Yo to one of my friends in Yo, and they'll just get a message on their phone that says, Yo. All they can do is touch my name and send me a Yo back.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Well, that sounds to me like the... Do you remember we used to be able to poke people on Facebook?
Yes.
That's what it is.
This is new media. So if new media gets, you know, because tweets are pretty short,
mm-hmm.
But you've still got to be quite a gifted copywriter to make the most out of the 140 characters available to you. You've still got options. But with Yo, they've taken all of that away. You can only say Yo. That's it. So if we ever get to that stage, I am redundant here. If the message is... And there's been a lot of coverage. I'm surprised that you haven't picked up on this. Although I was on holiday last week, so I was able to indulge, you know, a lot of reading. And a lot of studies about why Yo is very popular with the cool kids. Obviously, me so mm-hmm. much. Not less
so me, yeah.
Not you. And they're all trying to kind of fill in the blanks and kind of, well, why? Why are people using this? And it's all about context, apparently. So if I send you a Yo... It depends on who sends it to you and when they sent it and what you're doing and what they're doing. You listen to it, you hear it in a different way depending on context. So,
yo.
Yeah, but it's just, there's no yo there, there's just the Y and the O. So, but it's like if when you've been on that all-important first date and then you casually send the message the following day, I had a nice time. Now, depending on whether you have really had a nice time, whether they had a nice time, whether everyone knew it was a really bad time, it's the context of the message and what they're looking to hear out of it that makes the message much more powerful than the letters alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same story with Yo, apparently. Just the case that, you know, if it's 4 o'clock on a Friday, Yo might mean let's do some beers in the pub.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a difficult Sunday morning after the Friday night, after Saturday night out, then a yo might mean, oh dear. you've got to be a brave person to try and second guess where media might go, because no one saw yo coming.
No.
No.
No yo.
No one even saw it when it was here, but here it is.
And there it's gone again.
Yeah, it might well have done.
Well, you mentioned sort of like here and gone. Snapchat as a platform, I haven't used it myself, but the cool kids.
Yeah.
Does that include you? I don't know. But this is kind of, this brings the whole kind of ephemera of communication to the forefront, because this stuff, it comes out, it's transmitted, and then it disappears. So it's only the recipient that needs it once.
Yep.
That's the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I, when Twitter was first launched a few years ago, I liked that idea of brevity. Brevity is the soul of wit, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And forcing people... And it's a bit of a trade-off, isn't it? Because with only 140 characters, it's a question of how much kind of understanding do I lose from my statement, or which crimes against grammar do I...
Yep.
Do I do?
Yeah. Clever. Well, yeah, very clever.
The indomining of language here on the podcast. commit crimes against grammar. But on the flip side of that, there is the long form sales letter, and this idea that there is no such thing as a letter that's too boring. It's just, or too long. It's too boring, isn't it? Do you think that the spans of attention of your audience are shrinking? That you will need to make shorter missives? Or is that kind of still the case? It's only as much as the interest will retain.
As a general rule, I think that attention spans for people that are spending a lot of time online are pretty short. But that isn't to say that every person in every market has suddenly got a shorter attention span. What it means is that that it's never been truer that a letter can't be too boring, because anyone that spends any time online gets to that bit where they're halfway through the article and then they see the other article in the navigation bar on the side and they click on that one before finishing the article they've already written.
TLD.
What's that?
Too long, didn't read. TLDR.
Okay, so, but people do that because because there are other things that are more tantalising, because the headline of that one article in the sidebar is more interesting than the body copy halfway down the article where I've already got the gist of the story and I pretty much know how it's going to end. And you just got to apply that same logic to your sales letters. Nothing's changed, but we do live in a world where there are lots of distractions. Snapchat is one of them, Yo is one of them, constant emails, tweets, SMSs, the whole lot. There's rarely 10 minutes in someone's day where they can just sit down and read something. They have to make that time. And to make that time, the old rules still apply. You've got to make sure that you're sending the right thing to the right person. Are they the right person? Because if they're not the right person, they're going to work it out pretty much straight away. So you've got to call out to them in the headline. Are you XYZ? If you are, then read on. Not really the best headline, but the point is that they've kind of identified, yeah, I am. I am an accountant in Hitchin. I am a roller skating hippie. Whatever it is. If they know it's for them, then there's a chance they're going to read on. And then every paragraph, every subheading, every image, every caption, everything needs to be high interest. When you are proofing your copy or having your copy read by somebody else, if they're kind of skipping through something, if there's something that you know isn't very interesting, then you need to tighten it up. It needs to be as exciting as that, as the polar bear, the dancing polar bear that's in the margin on your monitor when you're looking at Facebook. It needs to be that interesting.
But it comes back to the fact that there's the enticing headline, and that's what grabs your attention, and then you're getting through the half, and if you haven't got the point of it, then your mind's wandering. And if you haven't got the point of the content, then another enticing headline's going to grab your attention.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get people who you could sit and listen to for ages. They kind of have an intonation, or they're talking about something that you can't, I just know I could listen to this guy talk for ages. And there are other people, they just literally open their mouth and you're like going, I want to shoot myself already.
Yep.
I guess the same is true for when you do short messages or long messages. But people who say that I'm not creative, I can't write copy, but they can still talk in an engaging manner. Is that the case that you found, that people actually think, well, I can't write, but actually they do actually have the skills within them to write good copy?
Lots of people are scared of writing copy. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. It's because they're going to be judged, because they don't think they're very good at writing copy. They think that someone's going to read their copy and say that's not very good, and they don't want that criticism. They don't want to think, well, maybe they're really good at some other things and they just don't want to put their time into getting really good at copy, or they don't think they can get really good at copy, or maybe their spelling isn't up to scratch, or whatever it is. There's always that fear that stops people from doing things. But writing copy, getting good at writing copy, is just about reading good copy and writing copy. And in the beginning, the copy that you write won't be as good as the copy that you read, if you're reading good copy. But if you keep writing, then the good copy will arrive.
But what about copying?
Copying copy? Well, copying copy is a dangerous thing. But it depends how closely you copy the copy. If you can definitely look at the structure of copy. So if you are writing a sales letter or writing the script for a webinar or crafting an autoresponder campaign, then looking at an autoresponder campaign that you know works very, very well, and analysing the structure of that campaign. So it might, in an autoresponder campaign, autoresponder email sequence, it might be relationship, value, rant, value, offer, with call to action, relationship, surprise at the fact that you haven't taken up on the offer, and then price slash at the end of the campaign. Now that's the structure. Now you can copy that structure without lifting a word of copy. And that is where most people go wrong when they're copying. When they're swiping and deploying, they look at the obvious. They look at the words in the headline. Mm-hmm. They look at the bullet points. They don't look at the structure. And it's the structure that gives copy its power. It's the journey that the reader is taken on, whether it is across a 14-day autoresponder campaign, whether it's through a 28-minute video, or whether it's through a four-page sales letter. the structure is the important thing. That's the bit to look at. That's the bit to make sure that you're ticking all of those boxes.
So the temptation might be to think that, I'm going to take that letter and I'm going to apply it to myself and I'm going to take the bits out that said Mark Creese and I'm going to put my name in the bottom. People wouldn't be fooled. They wouldn't think that it's me talking. I think that's the thing. It's the difference about, as well as having the content, it's the tone of voice, the language that you use. Now that the Entrepreneur Circle has grown as a business and there's quite a bigger team of people, you have an elevated state of responsibility and you're not necessarily directly responsible for creating the copy yourself. Is that the case?
I don't create all of the copy for the Entrepreneur Circle.
They lock you in a cupboard, it's like, right!
So for Club Plus, for example, mm-hmm. we now create a lot of copy for upwards of 40 different business categories every single month. So there are three or four campaigns for 40 different categories. There's way over 100 little campaigns there, so 300 emails, say. I don't write all of those emails. What I have got is a team of marketeers who can all write very, very well. And they can all write in either our tone or the tone that we ask for a specific niche. And the tonality across all of the different business categories that we write for is slightly different each time, depending on what we think is going to work well, what seems to be working well, the feedback that we're getting. We have experts in each of the business categories that we work with who review the copy before we send it out to everyone in that business category and give us some feedback. Or we would never use this word, or we'd use this word, or this would be the industry standard language that we might use here. And I read everything before it's sent out. So there is a level of quality control there. Mm-hmm. But I'll be honest, the changes that I make to that copy are not often these days. First few months, I made quite a few changes to the copy. But the guys that we brought in, they're smart, they're switched on. They're like, okay, I understand that now. Now you've told me, I'll do it that way now. And that copy is much better. When it comes to the copy that people might read about Entrepreneur Circle, if it's sales copy, chances are very, very, very high that it's me or Nigel or both of us who have written it, crafted it, polished it, tweaked it, proofed it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that isn't because there's nobody else capable of writing that sales letter. Simply that we use a sales letter as a way to make a big step forward with the project. So if we've got an inkling, if we've got an idea, if we're thinking about doing something, then the next step for us, usually, is a sales letter. So we'll have a chat about it. We could do this, we could do that. What do you think? Here's three bullet points. Right, lovely. Okay, well, you go and write the sales letter and send it to me. And one of us will write that sales letter.
Mm-hmm.
Because the most important thing for us is being able to communicate very, very clearly and concisely what we're going to do. And we need to do that for our own benefit. So we're both very much on the same page. We need to do that for our staff. And we need to do that so we've got something that we can run past customers, prospects, and say, well, is this for you? And that's why the sales letter is one of the first things that we do, not one of the last. Because writing a good sales letter means you really need to have all of your ducks really tightly aligned, very much in a row. If you don't, you can't write it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't write seven bullet points, and you can't write a sales letter without a price. You can't write it without how you're going to buy it, why you do it, what the benefits are, what the advantages are. You can't write it without knowing everything that's going to be involved. You can't write it without answering the question in your prospect's mind of, well, why the fuck do I want this? You just can't do it.
Mm. So if someone came to you and said, Mark, I really can't write copy, I'm scared of writing copy, where would I start? Would you send them on you'd say, oh, well, go and see such and such his copywriting course and learn how to write copy. What would you say to them?
A lot of people talk, as you identified earlier, much more readily than they write. Consequently, if they are, say, trying to write a sales letter about their own business or their product, then a smart thing to do would be to record them talking about it, get that transcribed, get that typed up, and then at least you've got something to start work with there. So you can give that process some structure by, say, if I was trying to write a sale letter now about a new product that we were going to launch, is I would write a series of questions and hand them to you, and you would ask me those questions. So, Mark, what's this new product all about? Where did it come from? But why are you doing it? What's in it for me? Why would I want to do it? What about price? Is there a guarantee? What if it doesn't work for me? How long am I committed for? All of the questions that you might ask, rightly, as a prospect or a would-be buyer of this service, ask me. Because no one knows more about it than I do. So let me answer. And then I'm going to get that transcribed. Now I've got our little mini interview back. I'll find actually there's quite a lot of useful copy in there. And if I get the questions right, and experience will help you with those, you've also got the right structure in there.
And there we have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the solid gold that you're waiting through this conversation to hear. Because what you want to do now is you want to rewind and then listen to that again, because that's the gold. That's what we got it. So basically, that's it.
That's it. We're all done.
Done.
Now. Right.
Spent.
Good. We got there in the end.
So I think the thing is that it's getting across to people that, you know, these are the basic idea, and you got to go across. Got to get something across. Why not start with what you're most comfortable with? It's just talking.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Someone ask you the questions. Story is key there. You know, the kind of the why you're doing this. Now, if the answer to why you're doing this is your bottom line, if it's profitability, if it's the growth of your business, then people don't really care. So if there isn't really a very good story about why you're doing this other than those basic reasons, you need to think of one. There needs to be a mission. There needs to be a bigger reason, a higher purpose to you doing this, mm-hmm. other than the pursuit of money. And in that's the way that you craft a story about it. Now, it might be, I was talking to one of our best customers the other day, and they were perplexed because they couldn't solve this issue, which got me scratching my head and thinking, what could I do to help? And that's really where this came from. It could have been a survey that you saw that said that lots of people that were in this position didn't know how to do this, and that's where it came from. It could have been something that you struggled to do with yourself, either last week or when you were of an appropriate age for whatever product or service it is that you're trying to pitch. But creating a story around that is one of the most powerful things that you can do. It's your origin story. It ticks a number of boxes. The first is there's a story there, which people will read much more readily than they'll read almost anything else. And the second thing is it adds credibility. It tells people why you're doing it. It gives it that higher purpose. So thinking of that ahead of time, so that when the person sat opposite you asks you the question, why are you doing this? Why now? Why doing it this way? Well, then you've got something that you can tell them that people will engage with.
Oh, that's very eloquent. Very eloquent. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
So I think that if you have people who wanted to find more about the work that you do with the Entrepreneur Circle, where's the best way to find out more about that?
Head to nigelbottrell.com. NigelBotcher.com is our core website. There's a lot of information on there about everything that we do.
Cool. And so you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Just tell a story. That's what you need to do. That's a great place to start to talk it. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you, Mark. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. Apologies for all the noise. Just to prove that we're in a live environment.
Yep.
The hotel reception here at the Hinckley Island Hotel. I hope it hasn't interfered with your listening pleasure. Many vicars.
There's a lot of vicars, aren't there? Who'd have thought? There weren't that many vicars when we started.
No. It's like the birds.
We must be doing something right.
The vicars.
But you talk about telling a story. Yeah. I mean, anyway, we'll leave it there, shall we?
Yes, let's wind it up. Cue music.